and I don't care what your background is, and it doesn't matter. We're all in to be positive to each other, to the volunteers, to nature, and we need to be really good gospelers about that.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I am Chip.
And I'm Chris, and this is episode 34 of the show. This week we have the one and only Herb. I feel like we say that every week, but I think it's true.
He is the only Herbert Crable.
Herbert Crable is on the show. He's co-director of Swim Run North Carolina, editor of Slow Twitch. This was a really fun, wide-ranging interview that we'll talk a little bit about later in the show.
Yes, on to the training update.
Yeah, so our training kind of went sideways this past week due to forest fires in Northern California and Southern California. One of the fires is bigger than the state of Rhode Island, which is kind of scary. So we had to stay indoors because of poor air quality, or swims were canceled, things like that. We couldn't really do anything that wasn't on something stationary. But all that being said, hey, our thoughts go out to all the folks that have been evacuated from their homes, including my parents.
Yeah.
And those working day and night to fight these fires and help those that have been displaced. So, you know, training seems very incidental to stuff that's happening. But yeah, that's our update, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. On to shout outs this week. So this week we have one large shout out for a group of people, both current and former Otolo world champions, and they're planning on swimming and running, or swim running, the entire Stockholm Archipelago in 3 days. And that's supposed to happen this weekend at the end of August. So that's a total of 150K of trail running and about 50K of swimming. So it's basically one Otolo World Championship race each day. And so the shout-out's going to George, Pontus, Kristen, and Annika, who are the four athletes that are participating in this.
Yeah, and we'll try to get them on the show to talk about this feat and ask all the key questions that people have, which is what, why, and what?
And more.
And more. Yeah, but it's kind of a crazy thing to... I love it.
50Ks of swimming is...
It's actually more than the three, at least swimming-wise, it's more, because what's the swimming, 10K for mm-hmm. the World Championship? So
nice.
Pretty crazy.
Maybe they're going swim heavy. Now on to our Feats of Endurance Weekly Award Challenge. We have shipped bumper stickers this week, so if you have one, keep your eyes peeled on your mailbox or in the post, yes, as they say, across the pond, for your bumper sticker. And if you haven't heard from us, for some reason to get your address, please proactively reach out to us so we can get those to you. We don't want to keep waiting them up. Now that we actually have the stickers, it's easy to ship them out right when it comes out. But this week's award goes out to Trista and Amy of Team Adorkable. So they have been totally taking the feats of endurance to heart the whole summer, doing reverse dopey challenges, secret, quote-unquote, secret 50-mile block, neighborhood 50-mile trail runs on a one-mile loop. Craziness. Pure craziness from these two teammates who are abroad. And Trista was kind enough, like Beak a few days ago, or a few episodes ago, rather, to send us her thoughts on this whole feats of endurance and why it matters so much to her. So here it is in her own words.
Hey, guys. This is Trista of Team Adorkable. My partner, Amy, and I, we live in different states. I'm in Pennsylvania, and she's in Texas. And all of our training is done together, but from afar. So we got, like, the whole virtual thing down. But when 2020 fell to shit and all our races were canceled, we tried to find ways to continue training, but also making it really fun. So her and I, along with some other swim run friends in Charlotte, we came across the GVRAT, which is the Great Virtual Race Across Tennessee, which basically is a race that you have 4 months to complete as many miles as you can. The idea is that you would virtually run across the state of Tennessee as many times as you want to. So pretty quickly, as we started logging our miles, our little group turned into like this competition of bad ideas. Like, how creative can we be in finding ways to make this running fun? And it seemed like every week or so, someone was throwing out a different bad idea. I think it started with a Yeti challenge, which you run 5 miles every 4 hours for 24 hours. And then we did a 50K on the road, which for me, thank you, quarantine, was a half-mile loop in my neighborhood, which was horrible for a 50K. And then we did the Goggins Challenge, the 4x4x48, where you run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. After that, we did something we dubbed the Triple Rona, which is 3 days in a row of the half marathon distance. And then in July, Amy came at me with the Dopey Challenge. The Dopey Challenge is a Disney race that's over 4 days where you start day one with a 5K, day two is a 10K, day three you run a half marathon distance, and then on day four you finish it off with a marathon distance. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome, but you know, it doesn't really work with my schedule. Can I do it in reverse? And Amy was like, what do you mean? Like a Yeepod? Because Yeepod is Dopey spelled backwards. So it became hashtag Yeepod. So on a Thursday morning, I found myself out running in the middle of a field listening to the Low Tide Boys podcast, as I usually do on my long runs. And about mile 15 or so, they announced their new segment called Feats of Endurance. And I was like, in that moment, I was just like, oh my God, I feel so seen. Like, I felt as if they were talking directly to me. Like, hey, crazy person doing that dumb thing over there. Like, we see you're crazy. We are your crazy. Like, we acknowledge you're crazy and we want to reward your crazy. So I went home after my run. I created my Strava account and like joined their club and I logged my Yeepod runs. And then like over the next month or so, you know, we continued like our friendly competition and snack talking and, you know, logging miles towards this 1,000 mile finish. And over the weekend, actually this last Friday, we, completed our 1,000 mile race. So I ended it with a 50 mile trail run on a mile loop. And in true Amy fashion, thank you, crazy Texas weather, she finished her runs like in a shit storm caused by like double hurricanes or something. I don't know what was happening down there, but she had crazy weather and we both persevered to finish our 1,000 mile run on the same day. And I can't wait to tell her that she gets a bumper sticker for all of her efforts. It's been a really long summer and a lot of miles that we logged together. And I think she's going to be pretty pumped about the bumper sticker. So thank you, Low Tide Boys, for having this fun segment to share our crazy ideas with like-minded people and just to keep things like interesting and fun. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, it's not
a pretty crazy summer.
Yeah, it's a feats of endurance. They were doing feats of endurance before we gave
before
it a label.
Before it was a thing. Yeah. Absolutely. So keep up the great work, ladies, and keep grinding away on the Strava Club. We're well over 100 members now, so that's so cool to see. And we love to see the discussion and everything that's happening in there. So on to our newest segment, which I need to think of some Foley work for a theme song. This Week in Swim Run. We'll put a better theme song.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that.
No. This Week in Swim Run.
Yeah, so we mentioned it last week that we were going to try to do this. So I spent 20 minutes doing internet research and checking people's Instagram, but as far as we could tell, there were three swim run events that happened last weekend, and that we're talking August 22nd and 23rd, including an Otola merit race in France. The photos look great, obviously gave us major FOMO, and just going to say we want to apologize in advance for butchering all the pronunciations, even though we got help. People were nice enough from Sweden to actually, Isabella reached out. I was like, I need help. I need someone to help me pronounce this. She probably failed because I stink. But so on August 22nd, the Skatas Sjöar swim run.
Skatas Sjöar.
It featured a 10K and a 15K event. It took a place just outside of Gothenburg. And it looked like a really cool vibe, like everything you'd expect from a cool local swim run in at the birthplace of the sport. Now, also on the 22nd, there was the Imel swim run, which featured a short course and a long course option. And the race was put on by this company called A to B Events, which I just think it's an awesome name for a swim run race company. A to B. I love it. Makes so much sense.
So much sense.
Lastly, Swim Run Man, Great Lakes of Laffery by Head, that's the official title, took place in the Alps of France on Sunday, August 23rd. featured a sprint race, a classic distance, and then the what they call the vertical Uttala merit race, which was about 30K. That race looked really ridiculous because on the trail map, you do swimming and running, no problem. And then the race kind of ends on the top of the Alpe du Grand, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, looked like fun. So I'm sure we missed some races. If you want to tip us off on a future race or you want us to include it, just send us an email, lowtideboys@gmail.com, and we'll do our best to get it in.
Yes. Now on to our updates, relatively short this week. As you know, we're going to keep plugging our International Swim Run Adventure Guide. We've gotten a bunch of great entries. Keep sending those in there. We're kind of letting and growing that pot so we can release it with have a couple in there that's not just a few states or a few countries. But that is right on our website. There's a form on the homepage, so fill that out with your favorite swim run training ground so we can share the love of swim run with everyone nationwide.
Definitely.
Now, don't forget, we're going to have a couple of open water specific swim coaches from Tower 26 who we had on with Jerry Rodriguez and Emma E.K. Lidbury a few weeks ago. Now, this is going to be kind of an Ask the Coaches episode, so submit your open water specific swim questions to us via email or DM on Instagram, and we'll be sure to ask those during the show.
Yeah, so I guess we should just go right to the interview. We mentioned, we had Herbert Crable on the show. He is a huge figure in terms of just getting the word out, huge exposure with Slow Twitch, and just done he's a race director. He understands the sport. He gets the whole vibe of it, loves it. So it's really great to sit down with him as someone who's super experienced just in endurance sports, mm-hmm. but also was also super stoked on swim run. So it's nice to talk to someone of his caliber to kind of go into his athletic background, how he found endurance, and kind of everything that he's doing now. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and touching on a couple of his really wild endurance activities as well, because he negative split 100K.
On a treadmill.
On a treadmill. So you can just hear more about that later.
Yeah.
But without further ado, here's the one and only Herbert Crable.
Yes. All right. With us today, we have a gentleman who pretty much needs zero introduction. We have Herbert Crable on the show. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
So before we get started on stuff, I'm just going to go ahead. I tend to do this on the show, but I'm just going to give a hot take right now. And I'm going to say that I don't think there's anyone who's been more influential than you in spreading the gospel about swim run in the United States. That's my hot take. That's my hot take.
Top three, at least. Top three.
Yeah, definitely, definitely at the top. And we definitely want to get to swim run, but I think we want to go all the way back. You're a crazy endurance athlete. I have a question about your dojo that I see on Instagram. Yeah. So remind me to ask about that later. But we'd love to hear from you sort of what sports did you play growing up, how you found endurance, and kind of where you're at now.
Yeah, I mean, like I grew up in Germany and lived there until I was 22 years old. I came over here as an exchange student in 87 and then kind of got stuck here. But in high school, it's very different from here. We really do not play as many sports, or you're not really a dedicated athlete, right? So you're not a football player or a baseball player or a soccer player. You do different sports in high school, whether it's gymnastics or track and field, and you just do different stuff. Most of the sports are done outside of school. You do that. They are all club sports. And my parents always wanted me to try different stuff. So I did gymnastics, I did team handball, I did swimming, I did table tennis. I mean, I did all kinds of stuff and tried and really didn't care for much of it. But I raced bikes when I was younger and I was pretty decent at it. And I did that until I was in fifth grade. And then my parents put an end to it because teachers complained that young Herbert was doodling bicycles in school in his notebooks. And not just one day, but often doodling bicycles. And so my parents put an end to my bike racing career. And so I just kind of did whatever sports there were. And a friend of mine took me to a mountain running event in Germany, and they are fairly popular, where you basically, you start somewhere in the valley, you run to the top, and then actually a bus takes you back down. And it was really, I really liked it a lot, and kind of did more running events, even though cycling was kind of my passion. I did more running events. Swimming wise, I was always an okay swimmer, but really nothing to talk about, right? So when I first got introduced in the US, when I came here, a friend of mine said, oh, there's a triathlon in town. You should try this triathlon. I was definitely one of the worst swimmers in the triathlon. And I hammered hard on the bike and ran decently well. And at the time, I'd always joked, oh, do you know how they use me actually for swimming to measure the swim distance? I said, how did they do that? They sent me out, and when it's 30 minutes, that is a mile. so that's how they set the markers. They just let the crable swim for 30 minutes, and exactly where I am, and after 30 minutes, that's the mile.
Hey, at least you're consistent, steady.
Thankfully, that time has improved since. But yeah, that was my glory days. Those were my glory days of swimming. And then I joined the military in Germany, which was mandatory at the time. And I kind of did a lot of running because it was beneficial. Mm-hmm. Instead of like moaning that I had to be in the military, I kind of made the best out of it. I was ambitious and focused and partook in like, I was in the military police and took part in running races with the military police. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. Got me extra days off and just made stuff go away faster. And then I came to the US, got introduced to mountain biking, raced mountain bikes professionally for several years, and did some triathlons when I worked at Lightspeed, because that was the only thing I hadn't done seriously, and especially in Ironman distance. And because we sponsored all these Ironman athletes, I wanted to do a couple of them to kind of have an understanding when I talk to the professionals what it's like. So I'm not just speaking out of my ass, basically. And so I did four Ironman races, but I didn't much care for the organization and how the races were run with overcrowded courses. And so I decided I had enough of that and I would only do smaller field events moving forward.
Gotcha.
Interesting. And then where did swim run
enter your life?
Kind of pop in this journey.
Well, I had written a lot about various UTLU races and also Rockman and other events, and I'd really always wanted to do Norseman at the Norseman Extreme Triathlon. Just that seemed to be the right thing for me, the right event. Not too many people, a super tough course. Drafting is not really helpful. There's not that many people where drafting can be excused or said, well, it's too many people in the course, we can't help drafting. But it just didn't work out. And then one year, it just kind of turned out that I could go do Ötülő Engadin in Switzerland. And I found a partner. It was a little bit of a circus act to get this actually done. And I didn't specifically care who it was. I just wanted someone who's somewhat an equal athlete, but I didn't care whether it is Bob or Susan or Paul. Didn't really matter to me. I was open-minded about it. And that's also the time when we discussed having our own race in North Carolina. So that was almost the same time. I initially was not part of that group that organized Swimrun North Carolina. They just asked me for help. Not so much to organize it, but to promote it on Slow Twitch or to talk about it on Slow Twitch. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, do you have any pictures? No, we don't. And so like, where's your website?
Boring article with no photos in it.
Right. And so I said, well,
it's like you're not ready for prime time.
Yeah.
I can help you with that. I can help you. I can shoot the pictures and then I'll help you make the website, and then you have the race, and then I can maybe talk about it. And so I saw the course, and I really liked it, and I liked the guys, and we kind of got along well. And actually, I had met one of the other race directors, Jan Kriska, through Slow Twitch, even though he lives really close to me, but I interviewed him on Slow Twitch because he does all these crazy events that make what I do seem very lame in comparison. Wow. I mean, he's done 1,000-mile running race in Alaska and all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, he is pretty incredible. And there's, like, he always says to me that the mind is my biggest enemy because there's certain things I was like, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, you can. I said, I don't want to. But he will always pick the harder and the longer. He's done the Biggs Backyard Challenge. Done all kinds of unique races. And that's why I had interviewed him. And now we're running Swimmer North Carolina as a crew of three.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, because of the coronavirus COVID-19 situation, that you did have to cancel the race this year. But that one for sure is on our list to do. And the pictures look absolutely stunning. And the course seems to be one of the most challenging courses, at least in the United States, for sure.
Well, I don't know if it's the most challenging course. It has its own challenges, right? So it's really hard to compare any course because every course has its unique nuances, right? Ours is definitely favors a really strong trail runner, and it's less swim heavy than some other courses. It's a super technical run. It has really, really tough segments. I haven't been at all the other courses in North America to say it's hardest, but it's definitely a tricky one. It has stumped really, really, really good triathletes, including professional triathletes who've come to our course and not fared as well as they thought they would do.
It sounds like maybe you were inspired a little bit by Attila Inkeden that just happened here a couple weeks ago. Very similar sounding, but kind of rewards the real technical trail runner, but the Inkeden does have the really cold swims. Is the course as beautiful as it seems online, as Otolo makes it seem with all their great videos, having done it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, like, I picked Engadin also because it would suit me, right? I mean, so our race course suits me. That's not why we chose that course. It's we have what we have to make the course what it is. So we would love to have more water. We just don't have it, right? So we have to make the best out of the land and the water that we have. And I think we've kind of done that. Engadin has more water. It has stunning mountains. It's a really unique course. And it suited my strength as well. That's why I wanted to do that one versus going
Thousand Lakes
going
or
to
something.
Isles of Scilly, where I have to swim a lot more. Mm-hmm. I mean, my swimming is definitely better, but I'm a better runner. And so I chose Engadin. And plus, I grew up really close to the Swiss border, and so it's closer to home. I knew I could have friends come. And so there were other benefits of racing in Switzerland. But I liked what Michael Lemmel and his crew, what they have done at that race and how they with the passion they talked. And we feel the same way how a race should be run, right? In terms of if you litter, we'll kick you out of the race. I mean, like,
and you're banned.
We need to keep nature clean. Yeah. If you're a jerk to a volunteer, we'll kick you out of the race.
Yep.
I mean, we don't want that. I mean, there's no one is higher and mightier. And I don't care what your background is. And it doesn't matter. We're all in to be positive to each other, to the volunteers, to nature. And we need to be really good gospelers about that. And if you cannot be part of that, we don't want you. I mean, we don't care if you don't come back.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a very aggro way of saying what we totally believe, which is just like one of the amazing things about Swim Run is how positive everyone is to each other, but also this real honest focus on you're moving through nature, leave it better than you found it. Treat everyone with respect.
Yep.
You know, everyone hang out. the whole time and cheer everyone on. You know,
the community aspect
piece
of it
is so great.
And
right, I mean, because if
go ahead,
right, if you think about it, right, I mean, no one is making a living from this, and so this is supposed to be. I mean, we are competitive, that's for sure, but you paying your mortgage does not depend on how well you do in our race or in Engadine. Very few people at the very top make a living off that, but that's not the only way they make a living, right? And so why be a jerk about whether you're 20th or 25th place? Why?
It makes no
sense at all. I mean, who and probably your partner is probably embarrassed about your actions if you do that, right? And so it doesn't help anyone, and it really wouldn't help grow the sport. But people haven't been like this. So I mean, when I was listening to Michael and Mats talk about this in Engadine, I kind of looked around the room because I knew there were a lot of triathletes there, and I expected someone to go, "What are you talking about? I'm paying a lot of money, and what do you mean I have to be patient?" Or but everyone everyone accepted this and everyone applauded. It's like, wow, that's really great that people actually agree with this. And so when we talk about it before our race, and everyone is, they like what we say. I mean, they want us to be.
Yeah, people want community. People want to feel the support while you're racing. It doesn't have to be this sort of individual time trial, me against you. It's like, we're all doing this together. These courses, as a general rule, are all challenging. We've got to look out for each other, and everyone does the best they can. And some people do better than others.
Right. No, and then that's okay. And I mean, we are pretty strict. We don't let you can't just register for our race. Mm-hmm. So you have to, there are certain times we expect, if you can't run a road half marathon under 2 hours, it's our race course is probably not for you.
Yep.
If you can't do a half Ironman under 6 hours, maybe it's not, maybe our race course is not for you. Right. I mean, it doesn't mean you're not good for swim run. It just means maybe our course is not ideal for that person.
Yeah.
And so we screen teams because I think it's good to have diversity, and not everyone needs to be in the hunt for the podium, but there's also, it's not fair to the volunteers that maybe one team decides they want to just walk the course.
Yeah.
And because we have a group of volunteers, they have to hike 2 miles to the top of Moore's Wall, and they have to carry 8 to 10 gallons of water up there.
Wow.
And it's a super steep climb, and it's windy on the top typically in October. And so I don't want them to sit an extra 2 hours on top of Moore's Wall.
Totally, yeah.
Because a couple teams decide they want to walk the course.
And yeah, I mean, it's also a safety thing, right? Like, if they have a problem, how are you going to get them out if you're, you know, somewhere in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I mean, a big problem with it is it's not just the convenience for the volunteers, but it is indeed a safety factor. If you are not moving fast, there's a big chance you get hyperthermic or just super cold. So speed is your friend. Moving after the swimming in cold water, it helps you get warmed up again. And if you're walking, that's the beginning of your demise.
Yes,
that is true. Now, Herbert, I want to ask you a question. So you mentioned something earlier on how, you know, every race is unique and you really have to prepare for sort of each race in its own way and respect whatever it is it's throwing at you. Can you just, I'd love to just get your thought process on, you know, you're a race director. If you were going to make a new race, and I think one of the great things about swimrun is like you can find all these random places to do races potentially, right? It doesn't have to be an archipelago. It can be lakes. It can be Pacific Ocean. It can be all kinds of stuff. But I'd love to get your thoughts on, you know, what it is that you think make, what are the features that you think make a great race and why?
I think it has to be a unique place in nature. Something that you may not see otherwise, or you may be unfamiliar otherwise with, right? I mean, it cannot be. I think the races that have failed or have not done well are the races that have regurgitated an old triathlon location and maybe said, like, oh, we've done these two or three triathlons here, but we've lost entrance. Maybe we'll just do a swim run here and see if we can get some new people. And that's not the solution, right? Because you're still speaking to the same triathletes who then say, well, why would I try this swim run here? I'd rather do my triathlon here because I know the course and I know how it works and I don't have to get paddles and pool buoy and have to worry about all that stuff. Versus if the location is really unique, you may get actually someone to say, this looks really interesting. Maybe I will see what it's like. And even in our race, there are places when we go on recon runs, we take people on the course and show them part of the course or the whole course as the race comes closer. And there are people who live 30 minutes, 40 minutes from the course who have never seen certain sections of the course that we take them onto. Never. And most hikers who go to the park have never seen those sections. And that's so awesome. To have that kind of experience is just unique. In Engadine, for example, I don't think anyone swims in that first lake ever. I mean, except for the swim runners. I mean, it is 49 degrees cold.
Yeah.
But cold. You've just run 3 miles uphill. You're plenty warm in your wetsuit and it's 270 meters across. And by the time you're cold, you're already running another mile and a half uphill. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a big deal. But I remember the first year when I was there, we swam across it 2 days before the race to kind of test it out and see how cold it really was. Oof. And there were hikers that were completely flabbergasted that people jumped in that water. And so, I mean, but it's part of the charm as well, right? You see things and you do things that you maybe not would do otherwise. And I think that makes a good course, but especially unique and attractive places in nature. Like, so is Orcas Island. I mean, it is a stunning, stunning course.
Yeah, that one's on our, well, I mean, every race, I guess we should just, every race is on our list of that one for sure is up there.
Yeah, we were going to try to do that one this year if it wasn't for COVID.
You have a very considerable time commitment in as a race director and volunteer, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Swim on North Carolina is actually a nonprofit. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we run it. So all three of us run it as volunteers. So we take not a penny from the race.
Yeah.
We give our time, but also I think it helps us run the race the way we do it because we don't have to worry about money, right? Because, I mean, if we need an extra tent because it may rain, we just order the tent and we pay for it. I mean, because it doesn't come out of our pocket, right? So it allows us to be just to do things
the right way, kind of.
Not the right way. It's just different. It allows us just to be a lot more flexible. And but also, I felt like, I don't know if you got paid for a job and you get paid really crappily for that job, and then maybe if someone asks you to do an additional job or more work, even though you already know you're getting paid poorly, how excited would you be to do that job? It would be really difficult. Versus us, we are volunteering, we don't care. So even though I give way more hours, I mean, I spend a ton of time on this, but it doesn't feel like I'm being shortchanged because it's my choice to be the volunteer, right? And so it's easy, and I'm competitive, and I want to do our race to do well, so I spend a lot of time on it.
And it definitely shows. I mean, it's one of the premier races in the States. Now we've heard this comparison a lot. We've talked to many different people that swim run is two things. One, it's sort of on the brink of kind of exploding in the United States or really taking off in the United States, and I want to hear your thoughts on that. And then secondly, is it the same quote unquote kind of vibe as triathlon was when you were at light speed in the late 80s, early 90s? Does it have that kind of similar vibe to you?
No, I think, well, two things. I don't think it's going to explode. I think it's going to grow. I don't think it's going to explode. I think they're not.
Why do you say that?
especially in the United States, because we are much more limited than in Europe. Yeah. In terms of what we can do in terms of courses. In Europe, it's pretty easy to have access to all kinds of parks and stuff like this, versus here, it's a much bigger deal also. Mm. So much land here is owned privately, and to get the access to go through the land here is just much more difficult. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. I mean, there are some great locations here where we could have great races, but we will never get the permits to do a race. That's gotcha. Much easier in Europe. And in Europe, it has grown definitely much more. But also, I think it's because all the places are closer together and it's easier to, in the car just to get to a race in France or to a race in Belgium or to a race in Germany or to a race in Switzerland, versus here the distances are just much larger. So you're pulling mostly from a certain region. I mean, I flew to Orcas Island, mm-hmm. and I flew to Engadin, but the average swim runner is not flying somewhere else. I think that they're driving. I mean, some of them are, but I think most people drive somewhere. In our race, I would say half the field is within 5 to 6 hours of driving distance, all the way to the coast of South Carolina, North Carolina, and maybe up to like in Northern Virginia, Maryland, and they probably drive. And then, but even people from Philadelphia, which is probably closer to 8 or 9 hours, drive down. But we have people from the West Coast, we have people from Texas, we have people from Arizona, we have people from Colorado, we have people, about half the field is from all over the country, and the other half of the field is kind of within 5-6 hours circumference around our yeah. race.
Do you know what kind of those same stats are for Ironman? I feel that Ironman probably has more travel or a big marquee type triathlon event, not counting Kona, would have a bigger draw from outside the kind of quote unquote local community that you were speaking of, you know, the 5 or 6 hour thing. Is that kind of what your sense of it as well?
I think it has changed for Ironman. I think when Ironman had fewer races, people traveled pretty far, but now, because mm-hmm. they have so many races, I think now most of the races are regional. Before, when I lived in Philadelphia for 10 years, and everyone would go down to Gulf Coast Triathlon or Ironman Florida. But why would you go now down that far? You wouldn't, right? And the same thing is, people from Chattanooga, when I lived there, would all go to do Ironman Florida. But now they have Ironman Chattanooga. Why would they go to Florida?
Yeah.
And so that has changed things. I mean, people still travel, but I think the bulk before, everyone would travel to Florida because it was one of very few Ironman races in North America. Mm-hmm. But now there's so many of them, people just don't have to travel as far to do one.
Yeah, that's a good point there. So Ironman sort of had this growth, I guess. And in your point of view, and you're obviously one of the most plugged in people into the endurance community, with Slow Twitch and all that stuff, and as well as the Swim Run North Carolina race that you're doing, what is sort of the opportunity for the swim running United States to really grow, maybe not explode or anything like that, but what do you see are the next steps that needs to happen for kind of growth to take off to where we do have, hey, California now has 2 or 3 swim runs that we can drive to, and there's a couple on the West Coast, on the East Coast. Is it like an awareness problem? Is it people are intimidated by it, or kind of what do you think there is?
It's both. It's definitely awareness. There's awareness is missing, but there's also a misunderstanding of what it is. I've met people who are perfect swim runners who have never heard of the sport, right? And so when I tell them about it, they are like, really? I hate cycling. I really want to just swim and run. I didn't know there's a sport. I said, well, there is. Yeah. And so, there is definitely an awareness issue, which triathlon does not have. I mean, maybe people don't understand a sprint triathlon and Olympic distance, that is a sport as well. But everyone is aware of Ironman, right? So of that distance or that is a triathlon. Ironman is triathlon to them. And even people who never do any sport are pretty aware of that sport.
Yeah.
Versus swim run doesn't quite have that. The other thing is definitely there's a misconception what it is. And when people will often say, that's like a triathlon without a bike. And I cringe every time when I hear that because it isn't. It isn't even close.
Yeah, a triathlon without a bike is a duathlon.
Yeah.
No, I mean it just isn't, right? And when people say, "Well, I would do that race, but I don't want to. I think it's silly. Why would I have to? I think it's they shouldn't allow pull buoys and paddles." And so like, you're doing a sport where you have aero bars and disc wheels. I mean, why don't you just ride your road bike? I mean, like, how can you look at another sport and belittle it because it has gadgets when your sport has gadgets, right? So it's not so simple. So I think people need to be a little bit more open-minded in general about it. And I always say at our race to the athletes and said, like, listen, tomorrow, I want you to go out and have fun, be safe, be friendly to everybody. And I'll also give you a task for when this race is over. And when you go home, I want you to promise us and work really hard to grab a friend, a neighbor, someone from your triathlon club or your running club, and convince them to do a swim run. That's your job, all of you guys, everybody here. What you need to do.
Yeah, so someone told us that, and we just went crazy with it.
Yeah. No one told us to start a podcast, but they told us to tell people, so we did.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, I think there need to be more messengers. And most of the people we've had have brought friends in. So we've had, like in our race, we've had a female team. Both their husbands came along to watch them race. And now they are two mixed teams, right? So
nice.
It happens, right? So we definitely have growth along those lines, but or actually the, as I said, friends come along and they see it, and we've definitely seen people come along those lines. But I have also noticed that we've had a lot of returning teams. Like we've had teams that have been on our race every year. I think last year we had six teams or seven teams that have done every single one of our races.
Wow.
And then we get a return rate of at least 60%. So 60% of the teams that do the race in the 1 year will come back the next year. And so that leaves actually very few spots for new teams to come in. We're currently at roughly 80. We stopped taking teams in early in the year once the COVID thing started because we didn't want to take money from people without knowing what's happening.
Right,
so we kind of paused. We just froze it and didn't push it. And I mean, people registered and we put them on kind of a, in a waiting room. Mm-hmm. And so we have 80 teams that are fully paid and registered. And then we have about 10 teams that are in that waiting room. And that leaves now 30 spots left over for next year because we limited at 120 teams because I think we could probably carry more, but we don't need to test that out because we want it to be a great experience for the athletes. And the more teams are in, the harder it is for us to personalize the event. But also we don't want the first waterfall that people go through, for the people that come in the middle, there's a little log jam, but just because some people that have never seen a waterfall like this that have to climb up on there, a little shell shocked.
Some looky loos.
And slow down, and it kind of backs up stuff. And so we don't want anywhere to have really large lines just because we put too many people on the course. So that's kind of part of the reason why we limit it to 120 teams. I think that the course can handle that. And if it, because also we know that if we get 120 teams in, we'll have probably 110 teams raised because 10 teams just won't show up. That's typically how it has been.
So it sounds like, Chipper, we should get in this waiting room before this episode goes live, so we'll get a little bit of head start on everyone that's listening, since it sounds like it sounds like that's, I mean, I think it's fantastic that the return rate is so high, and that essentially awesome. They have an opportunity to come back and do it again. I think that's just so cool.
It shows you have a great product, if you kind of want to put it that way, right? Like, what you're doing is great. People love it, so they keep coming back. And that, I think that's a perfect sign that you and the team at Swimmer North Carolina are doing the right things.
I have to tell you actually a funny story about this. So we always try to get the athletes a lot of swag. We pay cash. We pay cash to the top three teams, like 800, 500, 300. We have pool trophies that go four deep because we started that last year because we felt fourth place is really a stupid place, right? You just one place out of the money, one place out of the trophy. So we created a fourth place trophy for everyone in fourth place just so they at least have a trophy. And but we also buy a lot of stuff for the athletes, right? We bought, like, for the raffle, we bought 25 orange mud changing towels and all kinds of stuff that we throw out to the hand out to the people who didn't win anything, and do stuff like this. And we buy hats and we buy shirts and good food and all kinds of stuff. But the funniest thing about it is, we get local schools to personal notes to each team. Huh. And we have two elementary schools we work with each year. And they basically go, if Chipper and I were a team, like, you know, with a hey, Chipper and Herbert, one is from California and one is from North Carolina. And because they know where everyone is from and the team name, and they'll write a personal note to each of us, right? And so from two different schools, so we each have two notes. And they are super cute from the third and fourth graders. And all the athletes have stated that that's one of their favorite things about our race, even though we spend a lot of money on all kinds of other swag for the athletes. And that doesn't cost anything. That's just time. We go to the schools and give a show and tell to all the third and fourth graders in those schools about swim run and showing them the gears and stuff like this. And they are like little sponges, super excited about it. And they write the cutest notes. I mean, stuff like, hey, Bob and Mike, watch out on the mountain. They're dangerous animals. Don't get bitten. Or I don't know, whatever they come up with.
That's hilarious. I hope you're using so I'm sure once you show them one of those big Euro pool buoys, they're just like, I mean, that's what we need in America. We need to show kids these pool buoys so we expand people loving pool buoys as much as we do. I think that's...
Well, I mean, like, most of these kids in the schools, I mean, they're not exposed to either running or swimming. Most of those kids, they've probably seen golf, baseball, basketball, or football, and maybe tennis. And so swimming and running is really not on TV, right? So they probably haven't seen it. So they're like very interested in it. And they have so many questions that usually the teacher at the end has to kind of cut down. It's like, all right, kids, that's enough. We have to go back to our regular class now. You know, one more question and we're done here.
You probably look like a real life James Bond or a Mission Impossible or something. If you just walked in and you're full wetsuit with your pool buoy and your shoes and the goggles, they're probably what is this person?
No, usually I don't wear it.
You don't wear it.
I usually just carry a bag with all kinds of toys and things.
Nice. I have not heard of any other race that gets personalized elementary school notes, and that's pretty awesome.
You know, it's probably good you're doing it with third and fourth graders, because if it was high school people, there would be a lot of sarcasm.
I think why the third and fourth graders are kind of cool is because they make mistakes and they have kind of a wild imagination, so the notes are kind of cute.
Their imagination hasn't been dampened quite yet.
I mean, they have just really wild ideas, and they tell everyone, you can win. And sometimes it's awesome. When I give like a team that the card is, oh, this is a card from little Josie. She says, you can win. Do not disappoint her.
So, that's a lot of pressure. I don't know if I can handle that.
I know.
That's pretty funny. That reminds me of the episode of Seinfeld where Paul O'Neill has to hit a couple home runs for the kid in the hospital. Anyway. You're obviously a very passionate person about swim run and kind of endurance in general. You have also, we were looking at your CV a little bit about some of the endurance events that you've done. And I, I think it was earlier this year you were trying to do the race across Tennessee, I believe, if I have that correct. But you did a 100K treadmill run on your Woodway treadmill. I, having done 100K in Bandera, Texas with Chris, actually, I can't imagine doing that staring at the same screen over and over. My mind would have literally melted in half. So tell us about that.
Well, so the race across Tennessee, I did that. Actually, I ran out and back, which is a 2,000K or something, and finished at it maybe 10 days ago. But the 100K, I was meant to do a 12-hour race near where I live, about 3 hours away from me in mm-hmm. Black Mountain, North Carolina. And I only had signed up for this race because it's a mental challenge. It's basically a 3.5 mile loop, and you do it, whoever can do the most loops in said amount of time. So it's a 6 hour race, a 12 hour race, or a 24 hour race. And the 6 hour was too short. I didn't want to go all night long. So 12 hours was the perfect time spot. But when they canceled the race and moved it to next year, I thought, well, I can still run it. I'll just run it on my treadmill. It's also a mind challenge, right? So yeah. Can you run 12 hours on a treadmill? But after about I think I was 5 hours into the run, and it was just a little bit over, it's just under 50K 5 hours in. And then I thought, like, well, if I push really hard, maybe I can go sub 10 hours for the 100K instead of running 12 hours. I just see how far I can go under.
Negative split 100K?
And now, I ran super negative, and I ended up with 9:38 for the 100K.
Wow, Jesus Christ,
that's incredible!
But I ran it on Swift. I ran it on Swift, and so there were lots of other runners, and it really wasn't as bad as it sounds. The room where I work out is super well conditioned.
We have to talk about this room. So we'll link to your Instagram, because invariably every week or so there's a picture of you in this room, which
doing something.
I'm just calling it your dojo. Okay.
It's your, like, pain cave kind of thing.
It looks so tell us about this dojo where you have a couple bikes on the walls slanted. You have your treadmill. Like, tell us about this room.
Well, we built a house about 4 years ago, and when we built that house, we planned in a workout room / bike room at the time. And smart. So I have a Wahoo kicker that's set up to Swift, and then behind it, a Woodway treadmill that's also connected to Swift. And so because I'm now I still write for Slow Twitch, but part-time only now, because mm-hmm. I'm mostly a stay-at-home dad. And so there's certain times when I can only work out at home, and I've made it so that working out at home is fun, and it's a perfect spot to just spend time and time. I mean, I may not always be able to run or ride for 2 hours or 3 hours, but I can probably go in and ride 3 times 45 minutes.
Right.
Or run 3 times 45 minutes. And so there may be just different points of the day when I can go in. And it doesn't matter how rainy, how cold, whether my wife is at home or not. I can kind of find a time. It doesn't always work out. You know, I can't always just go, because my main gig is to make sure that my boys are okay. But there's little windows of opportunity when I can sneak in there and get a workout in.
Yeah, and my dojo is my garage, which I share with everybody else. But I have a kicker, and during COVID, anytime I've had like a conference call where it's like primary listen, I just jump on the bike, because it's still work. I have to be away from the kids, but hey, you know, might as well get something in.
Yes.
I think being a parent, I mean, we both are, we're all parents on here, but yeah, the kind of the barrier to entry of like, hey, I might have 30 to 45 minutes or whatever your time frame is, while the kids are napping or they're at school or they're wherever, I need to do something. And if it's all in your garage and you just walk 10 steps to your garage or to your pain cave or wherever, It's like that's the highest probability of it getting done. So that's why.
Well, totally. I mean,
even if I could go outside, if I have a 45-minute window in the garage or in the pain cave, I don't even have to wear a shirt. I don't have to have a flat tire kit. I don't have to pump up the tires because they're probably fine the way they are, and just sit on the bike and just ride, right? So it's faster. It's much more efficient. You get much more riding time because you don't have to find a helmet and you don't have to get...
Oh, yeah, just getting out the door. Oh, I forgot my water bottle. Oh, let me...
Right, and so whatever it is, and my GPS is not working, and whatever it may be, versus I just turn on the screen, sit on the bike, put my heart rate monitor on, and off I go.
You're good to go. Nice. Now, let's chat about slow twitch a little bit. I think we're kind of flipping the timetable a little bit. So you were at light speed, and then at what point, or how did your professional career kind of lead you to be, I believe, editor-in-chief at Slow Twitch, and what's kind of the time period around that, and what drew you to that endurance forum?
Well, I had I was let go at light speed, which is fairly normal for most companies run by an equity firm, right? So you get rid of the management and you find less expensive people can take those roles. And so I was kind of part of that that fairly typical equity investment group cut. And so I started my own marketing company. And at the same time, I got on the phone with Dan one time, and he told me about his plans to change the website, and he was going to look for someone to do editorial for him. And he said he would love to have me, but he couldn't afford me. And I just said, like, well, just try me.
Yeah, just give me a number, you know.
Write a number on this napkin.
No, because life is not always about money.
Totally.
All right.
Yeah.
So and I say this also because I'm in a lucky position, because my wife is the main income in our household, and that gives me the flexibility to work for free for Swimrun North Carolina, and or have another job where I don't get rich, or where I don't have to provide for family with, right? So I don't have to make enough money to do this or that with it. And so, but then I kind of grew into that, and I took it over, and I dove in super deep, and at Slow Twitch, bought cameras and went on shoots, but in 2016, I realized it was about 10 years I'd been at Slow Twitch, and the boys, I've been traveling, I traveled a ton, and I was probably in the worst shape of my life, because I was just every weekend either doing stories or watching other people do stories, and it was hard on the weekend for me to say to my wife, "It's listen, I know I just spent 5 hours in front of the screen making sure Slow Twitch is running. Do you mind if I now go for a 3-hour bike ride?" And so that's all gone now. And now if I want to ride on the weekend or run for 5 hours, it's not a big deal. Versus before, it was competing with my job. And the boys were really upset with me being gone all the time, because I traveled a ton for Slow Twitch, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to go to Kona anymore. I didn't want to go to all these races, because it's super hard work, and you end up coming back super stressed. And even now my wife says she'd rather have me go and race somewhere than work somewhere, because she says when you go and work somewhere, you come back and you're stressed and you're, you know, worked over and tired, versus if you race, you come back happy because you're fulfilled. So I'd rather you go somewhere else and race.
Nice. That's very fortunate to have a very understanding partner. That's good.
Yes.
We're lucky enough as well, you know, like.
Yeah, that's, I would say that's the secret of being able to do crazy endurance adventures, is having supportive. If you have a partner, have that person be supportive.
Yes, for sure. And she definitely is a winner.
Awesome. What Swimrun races do you have checked off your list, and what are you looking forward to do? I mean, if you're doing a 100K on the treadmill in 9.5 hours, sounds like you're ready for the Attila World Championship right there. So what's on your list or on your wish list in the next, 2 to 3 years, we'll say?
I really want to go to Rockman.
Yes.
I've done Lake James a couple times. I've done Engadine twice. I've done Orcas Island. I want to go back to Orcas Island one more time as well. And then there are a lot of races in Europe, but I think it's going to be one race in Europe each year, something else. And I did swim an Allgäu in Germany, which is also an Attila married race. I did that 1 year when I went to Berlin as well, to Thousand Islands. And so there's lots of races. And I want to go to Europe and do more races in Europe.
Same here.
Yeah, we need to get there. Well, first of all, we have to be allowed to leave the country, or countries have to accept us. That's the problem. That's the first thing.
There may be another year. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the beauties of swim run is like the travel is so easy, right? I mean, if there is no COVID, basically when I did my first year race in Engadine, I met my partner who flew in from another place in Europe. And we just met in Zurich in the airport. He had like a big duffel bag. I had a duffel bag. We had a compact car as our rental car, threw the bags in the back and drove to Engadine. And if you do a triathlon and you have to worry about a bike and all the bike gear, you have to rent a bus or like some kind of like monster vehicle. And you have to worry about whether the bike actually works versus in swim run. Yep. If your buoy gets lost, and actually I always carry all the gear that I want to have in my carry-on, so nothing gets lost. But if something happened to it, your running shoes get lost, you just get new running shoes and you just do it anyway. Versus I think if something is wrong with your bike in a triathlon, to ride a different bike is not the same thing, right? I mean, that is a mental letdown. And so versus in swim run, I think it's pretty easy. The gear is all fairly easy to replace. And even though I like my big buoy from Arc, but if it ended up being lost, I could do the race with any buoy, really,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it wouldn't look as cool, but you could do it.
it would not be mentally defeating to use a different buoy.
Totally.
Versus if I had to use a different bike, I would be really bummed.
Yeah, and then everyone kind of goes, oh, my bike fit's going to be off. Oh, I had my 25-millimeter tire on the front and 28 in the back. So, how am I going to, all this sort of stuff. But, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Herbert. There's a healthy stream of swim run content still coming out on Slow Twitch regularly, which is great to see. Anytime one of those articles comes down the pike, do they just throw it to you, or are the people over at Slow Twitch getting the swim run bug?
I think I force it on people. I think sometimes people have complained before that there's too much swim run content, but it isn't, right? I mean, like, for example, Engadine was the only race recently that happened. So that's why there's Engadine race content. There haven't been any actual or not that many other actual races. There have been some, but very few, and no bigger international ones. And also the thing is, I mean, what Swim Run has learned, and I think they learned that actually from Norseman Extreme Race, is that you make great pictures available to the media.
Yeah, hype movies.
And then the media, like if there's good pictures, then they can make a story out of it. And that's if a race can provide me with really good images, yes. I mean then maybe I can make a story out of it. But if there's no pictures, there's no story, right? So
I think a lot of people just get inspired, especially like the way Attila, some of these hype movies are just insane.
And Swim Run North Carolina is a great hype movie as well. And it's absolutely. Just like, it's like, it's almost like when you're in the movie theater and you know there's going to be an Avengers movie during the summer or some Marvel movie. It has super, that sort of same cinematic like effect.
Excited,
yeah,
like,
you get super
like
excited.
You
want
to watch it.
It.
You want to go do it.
Totally. Awesome. Well, Herbert, we have taken enough of your time, and we know you're on literally on the beach. So we want you to enjoy enjoy your evening with your family and your vacation. But we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. And obviously, you know, a huge thank you from not just us, but this whole swim run community about, again, everything that you've done for the sport in terms of getting that awareness and the word out there, and just keeping Swim Run North Carolina to be such a marquee event in the United States and a very welcoming and great community, swim run community there in North Carolina. So thanks for all that.
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for the kind words.
All right.
All right.
Until next time. Cheers.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're so inclined.
You can also sign up for our newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at The Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, drop us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Writing Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of our swim run activities, hobbies, and other bullshit we do.
Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then run to the finish line. And just keep going until you're done.
Yes.
Or until you cross the finish line.
Or run to the car.
Or run to your car.
Somewhere. Just keep running.
Peace.